listening to the nation's premier source on health, beauty, and wellness. Detroit Nation with Dr. B. Elaine Arterberry. Lifestyle driven.
Hello, this is Dr. E. Arterberry from Detroit Nation Radio, where we are lifestyle driven. Detroit Nation Radio is a premier source for beauty, health, and wellness. We are committed to showcasing individuals that are driving the nation and are from Detroit and the nation committed to health, beauty, and wellness. I am delighted to have our guest today, Allie Willis. She is an American songwriter, artist, set designer, multimedia artist, writer, collector, party thrower, and director. She has a Grammy, Emmy, Tony, Webby, and is an award-winning and nominated songwriter. Probably all of you know her hit, I'll Be There For You, which is the theme song for Friends, as well as co-authored the Oprah Winfrey-produced Broadway musical, The Color Purple. She has collaborated with some of the biggest names in the industry. She has sold over 50 million records, including September and Boogie Wonderland for Earth, Wind, and Fire. I am delighted that Allie is here today, calling in from Los Angeles. Hi, Allie.
Hi, how you doing? I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
Oh, you can't hear me?
Well, I can hear you, but it's very, very faint.
Oh, okay. I'll try to speak up a little bit.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. I understand you went to Mumford High School.
Yes, absolutely. I loved Mumford. I still, my house is painted the Mumford colors. And, I've done a lot of fundraisers at the school, and I'm still very much attached. I love Mumford. Go Mustangs.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm really geeked up to talk about your documentary, The D, Allie Willis Loves Detroit. This is a multimedia project, a documentary.
Yeah, well, it has shifted just within the last couple of weeks. So, originally what happened was I wrote a song for Detroit. This was, I wrote it in 2012, and I was so sick of, when you would say to people, I'm from Detroit, people would go, oh, that's too bad. I mean, all they were hearing was all this hideous stuff about Detroit. And I always thought Detroit was the greatest city in the world, the most soulful population. It really made me angry what everyone was saying. So I decided that I wanted to write a song for the city, and then I wanted to come back and record it with anyone in the city who wanted to be on the record. I wanted more people than in history to be the original artist on this record and really sing about their pride for the city. And I wrote the song with Andre Alexander, who's one of my most frequent collaborators. I wrote it very much in the spirit of September, because I think you could put September on at a funeral and even the corpse would be up dancing.
Oh, that's great.
It's like the happiest song ever. And that's the spirit I wanted people to feel about Detroit, because that's how I felt about it. So we came back and at a series of 60 sing-alongs all over the city throughout the end of 2013. And then just recently, a couple months ago, we did one last one at the DIA, the biggest one yet.
A sing-along. How many people were in the sing-along?
There's over 7,000 people as the lead artist.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
It also includes, everyday Detroiters. I've got almost every living Motown artist, writer, producer, through contemporary, artists like Major. It's just a testament, meant to be a love song, really, to the city. So that was conceived of as a record and a video. And because I do everything from write music, I animate, I direct, I design sets, I do everything, I really looked at that as a multimedia project to create a video that was unlike not just any other video that any city had if they had a theme song, but unlike any other video. Then we also shot, we archived everything. I had anywhere from 3 to 7 cameras at any time, because I'm someone who has literally videoed my entire life, from the day I got my first video camera in 1978. So that was also meant to be a documentary called Allie Willis Loves Detroit. The record is called The D, and the documentary was to accompany the record. But what was happening is that it was taking so long to do the documentary, and in the meantime, I finished the record about 3 months ago, and the video was just finished, and I didn't want to wait to put that out until the documentary was done.
Oh, okay.
And there were a bunch of personnel problems with the documentary, and it was kind of going off track. So just as of a couple weeks ago, I made the decision to, at this point, solely focus on the record and the video, get that out, then turn my attention back to the documentary, because this song needs to be out. It is so Detroit, it's insane.
I think it's fabulous. I think this record is going to have more artists on it than have ever been on a record before.
Yes,
I mean,
literally. And it's the happiest, most spirited thing you can imagine. I mean, people like, and I haven't shown it to that many people, but I mean, they just scream and go, oh my God, I never knew that was Detroit.
Where are people going to be able to see it?
Well, that's what I'm trying to put together now. You know, half the trick is writing it and producing it. The other half is how do you distribute it? How do you promote it? And again, because originally it was meant to be in conjunction with the film, we were taking a whole different approach. So now I'm, setting up a distribution deal. I would love any business in Detroit, any organization in Detroit, from the mayor down to, who owns the soul food restaurant. By the way, the best in the city is Chef Greg's. Soul in the Wall, featuring the Boogaloo Wonderland sandwich on Curtis in Wyoming. I'm throwing that.
Oh, good. I've never been there. I'll have to go.
Oh, my God. It's my favorite place in the world. But, I would love everyone to use this song in conjunction with whatever they're doing, because it really is meant to be, a theme song to accompany the reimagination of the city.
I think that's wonderful. How do you feel? How do you feel about this sort of renaissance? I mean, Detroit was always called the Renaissance City, but it didn't always feel like it was the Renaissance City. And now it feels like that.
I have mixed feelings about it. I'm exceedingly happy that it's happening, because there's definitely been a sea change in terms of when I now tell people I'm from Detroit, they go, oh, it's very trendy there. Everyone's moving to Detroit. That part of it is great. The part of it I'm not so crazy about is that when people outside of Detroit think about the revitalization of the city, all they've heard about is, the rebuilding of Midtown and downtown, all of the skyscrapers, and all of the foreign investments coming in. But the people of Detroit, to me, are still left out of that equation, unless you happen to live in those sections of town. So, I'm someone who rallies for the people, and I wish that some of the benefits of the revitalization were spreading out to wider parts of the city, which is something I hope the song is going to help with. Because that's the people that it glorifies.
What do you think? What do you think is the best thing about the resurgence of Detroit, though?
That the city is getting another chance. I mean, this is a city. It's really America's city. So many things happen first in Detroit, and Detroit is all about progress, movement, innovation, and community. If you look at the two biggest things in the past that it was given credit for, which is automobiles and Motown, these were both things that affected people. The tar extended, what your community was. You no longer were just friends with the people next door. You could reach people hundreds and thousands of miles away. Motown bonded people in a way, that was just incredible. So, you know, I want people to see Detroit in the same great light it was seen in, say, in the 1950s, which, you know, it was a magical city to grow up in the 50s and, you know, well into the 60s as well.
Well, we're going to be right back. We'll be back with our segment, Drivers of Change, and then we'll be back with Allie to talk about the spirit of Detroit.
I'm sure.
You are listening to Detroit Nation with Dr. V. Elaine Arneberry.
Hey. Drivers of Change, showcasing to the world the innovators from Detroit, Michigan, and the nation that are shaping the country. Nick Cave is our Drivers of Change today. We picked Nick Cave because he is an American fabric sculptor, dancer, performance artist. He is best known for these sound suits, wearable fabric sculptures that are bright, whimsical, and otherworldly. He did a huge summer-long show about these sound suits using the technology, the fabric, everything that made them interesting. The sort of Detroit connection for Nick Cave is that he trained and did his master's degree at the University of Chicago. At Cranbrook. He currently resides in Chicago and is director of the graduate fashion program at the School of Art. And that's why we picked him to be today's Driver of Change. We're back to Allie, who is doing a fabulous job at producing a song for Detroit. Is this going to be like the song for New York? Do you think it's going to have that kind of impact?
Well, I would love that. I mean, I would love that, you know, if that happened. You know, a lot of songs that are written for cities are not particularly great songs, you know. New York, Chicago, I mean, they had like these incredible songs that have just survived the ages. That's, you know, what I was hoping to create here. You know, and if I look at the song it was patterned after, which was September, that song literally gets bigger every single year. It's had a completely different trajectory than most hit records have. Songs like that really hit, they tap into a spirit, and there's a joyousness to them. So, you know, hopefully the answer to that would be yes, but of course only time will tell.
Right. I think it's a great project, and Detroit does need a song that sort of characterizes its movement. I want to switch gears now and talk a little bit about the color purple. I mean, color purple is being revived after its initial run in 2005 through 2008. And so, you know, you were so involved in the musical development of that and the production of that show. How did you approach the music this time around in 2016, 15?
Here's the truth. It is the exact same show, but what has changed is the director. So what happens is, you know, I co-wrote, the show is about 85% music. I co-wrote it with Brenda Russell and Stephen Bray. Stephen's another Detroiter. Between the three of us, we had sold 100 million records, pop records that everyone knows. But Broadway is really a director's medium. So, even though we are very involved in the production, it's really the director's vision that ultimately makes it into the stage. So the first time around, it was more of a traditional Broadway approach. It was a big Broadway show. And we were very successful, ran on Broadway, you know, as you said, for 3 years, continued, you know, on tour till this day. But then it was done in London by a completely different director about 2 years ago. And it was astounding. It was much, much, much less traditional, even though it was the exact same music, lyrics, and there was 20 minutes cut from the dialogue.
Was it a different arrangement? Is that what was different? Or
The staging is completely different. The arrangement of the music is completely different. The cast is completely different, though I love, you know, all the cast. But this one is particularly astounding. You know, Jennifer Hudson as Shug Avery. The lead actress who played it in London, who literally blew up into a superstar the day this opened on Broadway a couple months ago, Cynthia Erivo. And Danielle Brooks plays Sophia, and Danielle is one of the stars of Orange is the New Black. But there's no one in this entire cast who could not have their own show. I mean, the singing, like Whoopi Goldberg was talked about it on TV a couple days ago, and she said literally she's never heard such great singing in her life. So it's just a radically different approach to the presentation of the same show. But, you know, I personally feel that this is what we were writing.
And, you know, and so you're bringing
it's
that
kind of stripped back to its raw, most authentic self.
So
and I'm absolutely in love with this version.
So you're going to bring this London version to the U.S. Is that how
it's
going to work?
We opened on Broadway 2 months ago.
Okay, so it is the London version.
Absolutely rave reviews.
Better than the first time?
Like,
wow. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
So you know, it's currently on Broadway. You know, hopefully it will stay there a long time. And it will most certainly go on tour, but it won't be with the same cast.
Okay. People say, Allie, that you're one of the most prolific and certainly one of the most creative people in the business. What really inspires you? What do you need in order to do your best work?
Well, you know, I should say I am a completely untrained artist. So despite the fact that I write both music and lyrics, you know, to all my songs, I could never sit down at the piano and play you anything I wrote. I sold over 1,000 paintings as an artist before I even realized that you mix colors together to get other colors. I wrote The Color Purple having only seen 3 musicals in my entire life. I also was the very first person to ever prototype a social network in 1993. My partner was Mark Cuban of, you know, Dallas Mavericks and Shark Tank fame, but we were just way too early. So I purely do things off of instinct. I'm miserable if I'm not creating. And I think because I don't know what I'm doing, I don't get hung up on the rules as much as a lot of other artists do. So that, you know, that's a blessing and a curse mixed up together. I also hate all of the kind of business establishment. So I've always functioned outside the record industry. I don't know anyone who owns a theater on Broadway. I'm just functioning basically like a 3-year-old child. And truthfully, when people ask me where I get that from, I say it's from growing up in Detroit. Because I got to grow up during the Motown years, and that was so magic, I can't tell you. And I just know what the spirit of that music did to me, and I've tried to hold on to that feeling ever since.
Allie, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with this one-woman creative think tank, multidisciplinary artist and thinker whose range of imagination and productivity knows no bounds. I can't wait. Just 1 minute.
Okay.
Detroit Nation with Dr. V. Elaine Arterberry, lifestyle driven.
Lee, Allie, I want to talk a little bit. You were talking about you were one of the first people to really adopt social media as a form of expressing your creativity. What do you think about social media, how it's progressed, the internet now versus you were such an early adopter of the internet? What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's completely different than when I started. You know, I literally was the very first person, and it was at the very first Silicon Valley meets Hollywood seminar that they had in 1991 or 2 to say that the nature of the internet was social. Because everyone who was aware of what the internet was up until that point really viewed it as kind of a business or advertising kind of new medium. I looked at it as all these people are linked from all over the world, even though at that time all there was text on the internet. And I just thought, oh, my God, the collaborations that could go on, the friendships that could go on. But we, you know, it was just way too early to have a thought like that. As far as today, I really have feet on both sides of the issue. I think it's inevitable, anything that's happening today. You know, whenever you increase technology, especially that which brings people more and more access to each other, together, you know, there are always phenomenal parts of it, and then there are, it's inevitable that it just gets out of hand, you know. So I don't think there's any way around what's happening today, whether you like it or hate it. But overall, I think it's great. You know, people that have the argument that you don't have relationships anymore, I don't think that's true at all. I mean, I don't care if I've never met people face-to-face. I have incredible relationships online, you know.
Yeah.
And I can't ever imagine functioning again where I have to, like, go to a library to, you know, get a picture
to get information,
igloo or something.
Exactly.
So I, you know, I love it, but as much as I love it and as fabulous as I think it is, it's also an incredibly dangerous position that we've all put ourselves in, having this much access to everything.
Right.
You know,
I've heard that you have an alter ego. We only have a little more time, but yes. I want to hear about your alter ego bubbles, and I want to hear about those legendary parties.
Okay, I'll try and wrap it up then. Okay, I after I spent almost a decade trying to develop a social network in the 90s, I really felt starved to get back to just plain old songwriting, plain old painting. But I didn't really know how to get back in because those industries were changing. So as far as the art went, I always enjoyed really bad artists, like thrift shop paintings. I loved when people sang my songs out of tune. You know, I've had over 1,000 songs cut. I've seen very few of those artists actually perform them. But if you tell me that there's a bar band who's, you know, performing the Friends theme on, you know, cardboard boxes, I will run to go see them. So I decided to be one of those artists myself, and I very quickly painted 100 paintings and sold those under the name of Bubbles the Artist, and I, Allie, was the manager. And it just freed me up from thinking about getting into galleries, because I was painting these really wacky paintings that never would have been in galleries, yet I was starting to sell them. I was selling them very cheap. And people started collecting them because I started doing copy paintings. So if you bought a painting of my most, the one that sold the most was called Too Much Wawa. And Mr. Wawa is a guy with like a 5-foot-high afro. So you could have Mr. Wawa 1, you could have Mr. Wawa 24. So people almost started collecting these like they were bubblegum cards. Lily Tomlin has the most of them. She has 23. RuPaul is next at 17. I mean, she had quite an illustrious following. But they took a long time to do. I wasn't making enough money doing it. And when the writing The Color Purple was so intense, I convinced Bubbles to retire. But there has been a lot of requests that Bubbles reappear.
I think it's fascinating that you took on an alias in order to paint. But before we close, tell me about your involvement with Storage Wars.
Well, first of all, I love all those kind of shows. Anything
okay.
that has to do with finding objects, I love.
Okay.
So I've seen every episode of Storage Wars 150 times, and they finally called me a few months ago to evaluate a little oven, a toy oven that actually worked, that Mary, who used to be on Storage Wars Texas and now is on the real Storage Wars, had found. And we just hit it off instantly. So I did the last three shows, which are actually going to be in this new season coming up.
Oh, so you're going to be on it soon.
And
oh, wow.
I'm, you know, basically Mary's friend, and I'm going to be in a lot of Storage Wars now. And I'm thrilled because I have a great time.
I think that's fantastic. I think that's...
And no one can say Storage Wars and The Color Purple in the same sentence except me, so...
Oh, wow. So,
you know.
One of the things, before we close, we what is the one thing, we sort of call it our lifestyle-driven moment, the one thing you want to say to our listening audience about what inspires you, what you think could inspire them? You have such a fascinating persona, career. What do you want to say to our audience here in Detroit?
I would just say, being creative is an absolute gift. And no matter what your interest is, if you are interested in it, go for it, because it can teach you so much about yourself. You're living in Detroit, which I view as land of opportunity. My motto has always been, from the ashes come the miracles, and that against the greatest of obstacles, the greatest of things can happen if you only have the creativity, imagination, and guts to try. So take advantage of where you live. Be as creative as you can possibly be. You will be a very happy person.
Oh, I thank you so much for being today.
Well, thank you.
It was an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to meeting you. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, absolutely.
And I hope to talk to you again. I hope you come on the show. I'm really excited.
No, Paul, you know, we've only hit the very tip of the iceberg.
Oh, we could do a whole hour. I can't wait for you to come back.
Yeah, call me anytime.
Thank you. Thank you for listening today to Detroit Nation. This is Dr. Elaine Arterberry bringing you a premier source of health, beauty, and wellness from Detroit. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at 313 Nation Radio. And as always, achieve your personal best, then beat it. See you next week.
Detroit Nation with Dr. V. Elaine Arterberry, driving the nation to health, beauty, and wellness. Lifestyle driven.